Have you ever heard of digital currencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and buzzwords like blockchain, cryptocurrencies, and mining? Don't know what it all means or how to get started? Well, at Let's Talk Crypto, we break it all down in easy-to-understand terms and help you learn and earn in the age of cryptocurrencies. So welcome to the Let's Talk Crypto Show, brought to you by SchoolOfCrypto.com with your hosts, Barry Moore and Tom Galeski.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Crypto, brought to you by SchoolOfCrypto.com. I'm one of your hosts, Barry Moore. With me, as always, my co-host, Tom Galeski. Tom, brother, how are you?
Good, brother. It's been a very exciting couple of weeks in the land of crypto, so glad to be here again.
Certainly is. They all seem to be pretty exciting, actually. Always something happening. Now, Tom and I, we're both just total crypto nerds at this point, down the rabbit hole of Bitcoin and crypto, so quite frequently, we're talking to our friends, family members, acquaintances about Bitcoin, and we get asked a ton of questions about it. So, in this episode, we're going to ask and answer some of the common questions around Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So, hopefully, we can clear those things up for you as well. Now, the first thing is, what's Bitcoin? What is cryptocurrency? We talked all about that in episode number one. So, if you want to go back and listen to that for a bit of an overview about what it is, that's a great place to start. But in this episode, we're going to dive into some of the more specific questions that kind of we get asked all the time. So, Tom, what's probably one of the most common questions that you get asked all the time?
Well, obviously, the what is Bitcoin and what is crypto? Like I said, we went into detail in episode one, and I just tell people, literally, guys, it's just a digital currency. It's such as Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin is just one example of crypto. And easiest way I can explain it, just to all my friends that aren't necessarily techno nerds like I am, it's electronic money. It's issued and it's managed by us as the end user. It's nice and simple. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that.
Yeah, simple. It's easy. It's just and if you think about it, most of the money that you use all the time is digital anyway, right? So your employer puts some money into your bank account. That just becomes ones and zeros in your bank account. You swipe your debit card. That's just ones and zero on the machine. You know, the vast majority of your quote unquote money, you don't actually ever see. It's just all ones and zeros on someone's ledger. So Bitcoin's not really all that different. It's just that it doesn't have a physical manifestation to it. You can't fold it up and put it in your wallet. It just exists as ones and zeros only, which is one of the major differences. But you know, money's almost all digital now anyway, and a lot of countries want to go to completely cashless society as well because it's easier for them to control things if there's no cash. I guess the second question is, okay, that's what Bitcoin is, but why on earth would I get involved? What's in it for me? Why should I get involved in Bitcoin? So maybe we just start with Tom. Tom, why did you get involved in Bitcoin?
You know what? I actually thought about this the other day, and when I found out what it can do, being that we can transfer money, you know, around the world and it's instant and there's little to no fees, and I just got excited about it. But what really got me into it was the fact that I could build a computer, right? Yay, which aka a mining rig, and make free digital money. I went, sweet. So literally within 3-4 days of 20-hour days and research, I went and bought my first mining rig so I could actually make some of this digital money. So for me, knowing that the market is very volatile and it's, you know, quote marks, air quotes, high risk, I thought, why not use house money to play with and get involved in this digital world? And then I went down the technical path of building the mining rig. And now we'll talk things about, well, why would I do this? Because a friend of mine says to me the other day, okay, so this Bitcoin crypto thing sounds really cool, right? And I said, yeah, it is. And they go, what? How much is it? And once you tell them that it's $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 for one single Bitcoin, yet merely not 6 or 7 years ago, it was in the cents of the dollars. They're just like, well, how does this work, Barry? Like, how do you value cryptocurrency? Who determines the value of one Bitcoin or one of these alternate coins?
Well, that's pretty simple, supply and demand.
That's it.
The thing about one of the main differences between Bitcoin and, you know, say US dollars or Australian dollars or euros or whatever, let's take US dollars for example. The difference is Bitcoin is a limited supply, and it's always going to be a limited supply, unlike US dollars where they just keep printing more. You give it a nice fancy name like quantitative easing. I just keep printing more dollars and putting more and more dollars, billions and billions of dollars a month into circulation, lowers the value of all the existing dollars in circulation. Whereas Bitcoin, while there are more being created now, there is going to be a cap on it of, what is it, 21 million, I think? Is that right?
Just shy of 21.
Yeah. So once there's 21 million Bitcoin, that's it. No more. Nada. No mas. So it's a limited supply. So it all becomes a supply and demand market, right? There's this many Bitcoins in circulation. I want some. I've got to find someone to sell them to me. Well, then, you know, then it's a buyer's market. The people who are selling it, I mean, a seller's market, people who are selling it can decide how much they want to sell it for. Today, I want to sell it for $4,000. Tomorrow, I might want to sell it for $5,000, right? So more people clamoring, more demand, the higher the price goes. So clearly, the rising price is a direct indication of a more demand for the currency. So yeah, there is no central person setting the price. It's a peer-to-peer money. So it's everyone who's participating in roundabout ways setting the price for how much it's worth. Same as anything, you know, someone says, oh, my car is worth $10,000. I was like, well, not to me. It's not. I'll give you $6,000 for it. So it works exactly the same way. But I just want to kind of loop back a couple of the other reasons you might want to get involved in, you know, Bitcoin. There's Tom and I both are kind of technical guys, so we're kind of geeky when it comes to tech. And it's just a nice technical curiosity for us to try and get involved in this, in, you know, the digital manifestation of money. But there's a lot of other reasons that other people get involved. One is, you know, just simply out of a curiosity. It's kind of a social experiment, right? It's peer-to-peer money that isn't controlled centrally by a central authority. So there is kind of an undercurrent of a libertarian bent to Bitcoin, right? It's, you know, freedom from the government. Because depending on kind of how much you dislike the government, government uses money as a form of control, right? That's how they control their population. It's one of the ways is through the manipulation of money. So money is certainly used as a form of control. And if you switch the money that you're using from government-backed currency to a peer-to-peer open source currency, you're kind of taking away a little bit of that control. So there's a certain number of people who dislike that kind of libertarian freedom type bent to Bitcoin. The other thing is it's just an interesting social experiment, right, of this new form of money that's, you know, we live in what's kind of been coined the sharing economy, right, where you share rides on Uber and you share your house on Airbnb. Well, now this is kind of like the share economy version of money. It's just money for the people, by the people, kind of, so to speak. So a lot of people are interested in that. And then there are some people who are just interested in it's a vehicle to make money, right? It's gone up dramatically. I think in the last 2 months, it's gone from around $4,500 Australian to pretty close to $8,000 Australian in the course of a couple of months. So there's certainly money to be made. And if you're a trader or investor or whatever, and you're simply in it because it's a vehicle that's generating amazing returns, far in excess of pretty much any other investment vehicle out there at the moment. So there's a lot of numbers and a lot of reasons for you to potentially get involved with Bitcoin. Those are some of the ones that I've heard or some of the ones that I know of. Any other ones that you can think of, Tom?
But not really. Just to highlight your point too, just if we look back, if we talk about what we call the market cap, so the total amount of money that's been put into cryptocurrency, at the time of recording, it's sitting on about 170 billion with a B, US, whereas in March of this year, it was around the $20 billion mark. So this is real currency that's going into this crypto world. So it's super, super, super exciting. And I suppose my motivation to answer, loop back to your initial question, was why I got involved. I thought, well, hey, I can make some free money, right? So outside of the trading that Barry mentioned and the mining that I do, there's a couple of other platforms that allow to lend Bitcoin. It's pretty high stuff. It's margin lending and you gain interest from your investment. So rather than doing that yourself, there are companies out there that you can put some money into and they invest it for you. No different investing in a hedge fund like you would traditionally do, but we've got to be very careful here. And obviously, I'm going to cover a bit of our disclaimer. We're not financial advisors. We're here just to, you know, tell you our thoughts and our feelings on this sort of stuff. So please do your own research and do your own due diligence on whatever you want to do with it. So there's heaps of cool stuff out there, but there's lots of scary stuff as well. So we just ask you to have an air of caution on that.
Yeah, for sure. So what are some of the other questions that you get all the time, Tom?
How safe is it? Like at the end of the day, it's digital money. Like I'm sending this thing through like a computer browser or an iPhone. Like where does it go and how trustworthy is it and how do I know if it all worked and how can people rip me off? So we talked about in the first episode that this whole crypto world is built on this blockchain. Now, the good thing about blockchain, it's open source, which means anybody can see it and it's visible to the public. So any transaction that you send to someone, it's there on public record, so they can't deny that you sent the money. But you've got to be a little bit careful because if you make a mistake, on the person's wallet address that you're sending it to, there's no refunds. There's no callbacks. So you've got to be extremely careful. And one of the other big things about this sort of stuff is just to make sure that that you keep your wallet safe. Now, your wallet, we've talked about before, is where you store all your currency. If you lose your wallet and the password or your what we call the private key for your wallet, anyone has access to all your funds. And that's crucially, crucially, crucially important that we'd, you don't do that and look after it, because it is literally the key to the safe.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think that might be confusing a lot of people and maybe slowing some of the adoption down a little bit is it safe? And the answer I always kind of give is it's as safe as you make it, right? This is your money. It's your wallet. There is no safety net. There's no big brother looking after you to make sure that, you know, like if someone steals your credit card number and they spend up big on your stolen card, the credit card companies, you can just going to say, hey, those are my transaction. My card was stolen. And the credit card company is going to avoid those transactions, right? So you don't have that liability. Well, there's a little bit of a safety net for you there if your card is stolen. Not so with Bitcoin. Like, it's your money, it's your wallet, it's your public and private keys. It's your job to look after them. If you don't do it well, that's on you, and you lost your money. So that's like if I take out, you know, $5,000, put it in my wallet. My wallet's half hanging out of my pocket. I've got loose pants on. My wallet falls out of my pocket. That cash is gone, man. It's gone. There's no safety net of getting that cash back. So if you mismanage your keys, you mismanage your wallet, you send stuff to the wrong address, as Tom said, that's just gone. So it's as safe as you decide you're going to make it. So you do need to do a little bit of research, which is one of the real reasons we came up with schoolofcrypto.com to help people navigate this journey safely. You know, and like Tom said, if you send money to the wrong address, whoever's on the end of that wrong address is going to get that money and it's gone. I guess the big difference here is that all those addresses that you're sending money to are essentially anonymous, right? So if I send money to this big long public key address, which I don't even know how many characters is it, but it's long. I paste the wrong one in, I send money to that address. I don't know whose address that is. It's not tied to a person. I can't go back and say, oh, sorry, Tom, I sent you $100 by mistake. Can you give it back? Because there's no name associated with that key. I can't see who it is. So I can't even go up and ask for my money back most of the time. So if you do send it, and I've done it, I've sent $50 to the wrong address, and that's $50. I was just gone. No more. So it's as safe as you want to make it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But there are a lot of mistakes and a lot of pitfalls to avoid. So once they kind of make those a little bit more consumer friendly, I think it becomes a much easier road to adoption for most people.
Yeah, very good. Hey, Barry, just a quick story too. I was telling a friend about this whole Bitcoin thing, and he was super, super excited. He's one of my old techie buddies. We used to actually work together in the IT space. So we're now planning how to build this IT supercomputer, right, so we can mine currencies. I'll more on that later. So his misconception, I'm sure you might have heard this. I'm very interesting to hear your take on it. He goes, but isn't Bitcoin like just for like buying drugs and all other illegal stuff on the internet? Like that's what I know it as. Isn't that what it's all about?
I love that one. And I love that one because the currency has nothing to do with the activity, right? So here in Australia, for example, what's the most common way for someone to buy drugs, right? They probably go to the ATM, they take out $200 or whatever. They go find someone who's going to sell them ecstasy and they give them the $200 in cash. And there's your drug transaction, right? That transaction took place with Australian currency. So are we going to start outlawing Australian dollars now because they're used in illegal transactions? I mean, the currency that's most used in illegal transactions and black market activities, US dollars. Pablo Escobar used to make like something like over $400 million US a week. And we had warehouses full of US dollars. So much so that he used to write off like 10%, just because it got eaten by rats and damaged by water. So the currency has nothing to do with the activity that it's used for. Do some people buy drugs with Bitcoin? Of course they do. Do some people buy drugs with US dollars? Of course they do. So if we're going to outlaw every currency because people use it for nefarious ends, the vast, vast, vast majority of people are buying it for investments or to use it to spend it. So can I use it to buy cocaine? Sure. Can I use it to buy shoes? Yep. So, you know, do we need to outlaw it? Of course not. So I think that's just something that the, you know, the banks and the people who have a vested interest in seeing Bitcoin fail, I think that's just a something they'd like to bring out and peddle because it makes them look better and it makes potentially makes Bitcoin look bad. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect sense to me. And it's like one of these things like you and I have both done. Once you lift the bonnet on this thing and start looking around, you realize there's a ton more to it than illegal activities. I mean, it's less than, I don't even know, but I would say less than 1% of transactions. It's just that's how it's got its claim to fame. And unfortunately, in today's world, the media want something and catch your headlines that are going to make you watch, read, or click on that link. So, yeah, a lot of it's clickbait too. But does it happen? Yes. Are we here to condone it? Absolutely not. But there's so much more to Bitcoin and crypto that, you know, we just not ignore it, but we know it exists and we just don't have to worry about it.
And remember, some people or some organizations like big banks, you know, Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan is a perfect example. They have a vested interest in seeing this fail because it threatens their status quo, right? The big banks don't want this to work because they can't control it. How they can't make money off something they can't control. So they want it to fail. They want it to fail big time. And you'll see, you know, you'll see it. You'll see it all the time. A little while ago, Jamie Dimon came out and said, it's a fraud and I'm never going to talk about Bitcoin again because he gets some backlash about him saying it was a fraud. And then like the next very next day, he's made more statements about Bitcoin. Like can't help himself. But yeah, remember there are people and institutions that have a vested interest in this thing failing. And the number of people that have declared it dead and failed, there's a whole site called Bitcoin Obituaries. And there's been, you know, so people have written Bitcoin obituaries, I think 171 times or something like that, that it's been dead, but it keeps coming back stronger and worth more. So, but yeah, just remember, you know, this is a battle behind the scenes. This is a battle for control of money. So take everything you read with a grain of salt on both sides. You know, people will say this is the best thing ever. Well, is it? Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. This is the worst thing ever. No, of course not. Truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. And also Barry too, that we've got to remember that all this cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and all these alternate coins are all built on the blockchain. Now, the blockchain is the real secret here. And what we are seeing now in the news and the media is countries, governments, and people like JP Morgan are leveraging the blockchain because they can do these secure open ledger transactions around the world in super, super fast lightning time. So we're actually seeing them starting to adopt this in their future business plans. They might not be so public about it because obviously they don't want to promote it. But they're very clear that, well, if we take words from Jamie Dimon, Bitcoin is bad, but the blockchain is amazing. So, and that's out of like, that's my version of what he said. So we are seeing that the blockchain technology is here to stay. And we're going to see a lot more of this, I think, moving forward. Absolutely. There's no denying that.
Yeah. It's funny though. I think some of these banker types haven't, like blockchain is amazing. It has the power. It is like what the internet was in 1990. It has the power to disrupt everything. Just like the internet had the, you know, internet disrupted the publishing industry. It disrupted the, you know, the music industry and the video industry. And then secondarily, as apps come out, you know, it's disrupted the taxi industry and the hotel industry, et cetera. And it continues to disrupt a bunch of industries. So blockchain is very much the same because it has the ability to get rid of a trusted third party who sits in the middle of transactions, right? So as we said before, if I send money to Tom, it doesn't go through a trusted third party like a bank. It goes directly from me, directly to Tom. There's no intermediary. So you think you can apply that to just about any industry where there's government or big corporation oversight of a particular thing, right? So like buying real estate, for example, it always goes through some institution like a bank or whatever. But if you put all that on the blockchain, this person owns this property. Here's all the things that have been done to that property in the last 10 years, all on the blockchain. It can, you know, it has the potential to revolutionize real estate industry or any, pretty much any industry that it's applied to. But I don't think the bankers quite get what the real appeal and real revolutionary nature of the blockchain is.
They'll catch up eventually, mate.
But you're right. Like, you know, Bitcoin's half the story. The other half of the story is the underlying technology, which is called blockchain, which is really going to revolutionize everything. So not only am I investing in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, I'm also looking for those companies out there who are working in the blockchain space and taking that technology out to other industries like aviation, real estate, and healthcare, et cetera, as a vehicle for me to invest in. I want to find those companies who are going to be the revolution makers, and I want to invest in them as well as investing in the currency. So that's one other thing I'm looking at investing in.
So Barry, as I'll speak it to my friend David, quick shout out to Dave. when you're sitting there, he's going, all right, Tom, this stuff sounds awesome. How do I get involved? What do I need to do? How do I get some of these Bitcoin stuff? Let's go.
And well, you know, to be self-serving, the first thing I would say is go up to over to schoolofcrypto.com and sign up, get our newsletter, join and take one of our courses, etc. But the very first thing I would say is, first of all, avoid FOMO, which we talked about in a previous episode, fear of missing out, right? So there's a bit of a frenzy around, you know, Bitcoin, especially at the moment because the price has been going up crazy. So do a little research first. Sit down, research Bitcoin, research where you can buy it, how to store it safely so that you don't lose. Because if you lose your wallet, you lose your private keys, you might have, you know, $10,000 in your wallet. But if you can't get to your wallet, guess what? You don't have $10,000. So do a little research on how to safely store it. Do a little research on where to safely buy it. And, you know, maybe take a couple weeks to just take a deep breath and find out the lay of the landscape before you go trying to jump in with both feet. But once you've done that, once you've done a research, then you probably find an exchange that works for you. And that's probably the easiest way to get that Bitcoin is to buy through an exchange, similar to like what you would do with foreign currency. If you're traveling overseas, I'm going from Australia to the UK, or I'm going from Australia to Europe and I need euros. I go up to a little shop with my $1,000 of Australian dollar and they say, I need $1,000 of the euros. They take my Australian currency. They give me euros. There's been an exchange there. So that's exactly essentially how it works online. You say, all right, I have 1,000 Australian dollars. I want some Bitcoin. And someone sells you Bitcoin for $1,000. So that's the easiest way to get involved probably is to find an exchange that's legitimate, set up an account with that exchange, set up your wallet, and then put in your first money and buy a little bit. I'd say start small, you know, maybe like $1,500 just to see how the whole process works. Once you're comfortable with how it works and how to store your wallet and how to recover your wallet, more importantly, then you can start putting in some more cash. What about you? How did you get started, Tom?
Exactly that. So one of the, I suppose, the little tips and tricks, we're located in Australia. So the first thing I did was look for Australian exchanges. Something I learned and caught up during my research is that even though they have a .com.au domain name, meaning that they're Australian-based, they weren't necessarily located in this country. But the process is pretty similar across all of them. This is where you need some level of proof of identity, like a driver's license or a passport, utility bill, just to show them that you're real. So once you do that, this is one way that the government's trying, I think they're stepping in trying to regulate this process, because if I'm exchanging normal money for cryptocurrency, they know that Tom put money into this exchange. What I do with it after that, it all gets tracked in the open ledger. So in theory, if they could track it back to an exchange, they could put a name to a person's to a person's particular wallet. But we can have tons and tons of wallets, but every transaction's linked. So there's nothing to really worry about. I mean, this legitimizes the process, and I think this is a good thing. But the process is pretty simple across all of them.
And here's the thing to clear up. A lot of people will hear that the Australian government is regulating Bitcoin or the US government's regulating Bitcoin. They aren't really. They can't regulate Bitcoin because it's decentralized. It's not owned by anybody. There's no Bitcoin headquarters where they can go kick the door in with a subpoena and arrest people. That just doesn't exist, right? So governments can't regulate Bitcoin directly. So what they do is they regulate how you can acquire it. So if there's an exchange that's operating in Australia, for example, the Australian government can put rules and regulations on how that exchange operates. Same in the US. If there's a US-based exchange, the US government can come in and say, these are the rules you need to follow if you're going to run an exchange, right? So they're not regulating the currency. They're regulating your method of acquiring the currency, which is slightly different. So most countries will have what they're really afraid of with Bitcoin, the governments, is money laundering. Using Bitcoin for money laundering. So they impose in the US what's called know your customer regulation. So they say to these exchanges, you can't sell Bitcoin to people unless they provide ID as to who they are. You have to know who your customer is. They know they're not a drug cartel or whatever. Yeah. So as Tom said, like most of these exchanges, when you go to sign up, they want a copy of your driver's license or your passport or utility bill or something like that, because they're burdened with these know your customer regulations. So while the governments are regulating exchanges, they're not actually regulating the currency. Once you have the currency, once you have Bitcoin or whatever cryptocurrency, you can do whatever you want with it. It's yours, and they can't touch it. So Yeah, it's just a little something to clear up there about the quote-unquote regulations around Bitcoin.
Well, Barry, that's another question I've heard as well. It's like, well, okay, so I've got this Bitcoin, but what else can I do with it outside of, you know, if your strategy is to buy and hold it and let it ride the curve up as it increases in value, it can also decrease. So, Barry, I've got a few friends and asking, so they've acquired some Bitcoin. They're ready to go with it, and they're saying, but what else can I do with it? So if your strategy is to buy and hold it for the long term and ride the curve as it goes up in value, it could also come down in value. So that's obviously a risk that you that does exist out there. But also, I think because we're in such an early adoption phase, a lot of businesses, and I say in the mainstream, are yet to jump on board. But we are seeing, especially in the US, we're seeing big retailers. I've heard that Starbucks support it. I've heard Bloomberg. I've heard Webjet. I mean, I've heard some decent players out there currently supporting Bitcoin. And I know Microsoft are on board as well for certain things. And it's only just early days. I really see this really taking off. So the good thing is if you could get into the Bitcoin, for example, or into cryptocurrency now, when you're getting more bang for your buck as the price goes up, that means you'll have more money to spend down the track as we see the adoption into this business world. And I think you said the other day, Barry, even when you left the local news agency, supported Bitcoin. I think that was more of an exchange, but we're seeing this that now in news agencies you can take normal money and exchange it for Bitcoin. And that's just amazing here in Australia. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it depends on, you know, maybe we go back to that first question about why Bitcoin. Well, it depends on what your investing thesis is, I guess, you know. For me personally, I see this as a very long-term play. Like, I'm really curious to see where Bitcoin is 5 years from now, 10 years from now, right? So for me, it's all about buy and hold. Other people's investing thesis might be they want to use it for day-to-day transactions. They want to get off fiat currency and onto, digital currency, or some other people might just be in it to invest and make money, day traders or short-term trades or whatever. So I guess it depends on what you quote on what you use it for, kind of depends on what your long-term thesis is. Like, so for me, I want to hold it long-term. So I've got, two pools of currency at my disposal. I've got Bitcoin and I've got Australian dollars. So I know because of the inflationary nature of Australian dollars and any fiat currency for that matter, that a year from now, those Australian dollars are going to be worth less. I'm pretty sure, however, that a year from now, the Bitcoin that I have is going to be worth more. So when I go to spend one of those currencies, I want to spend the one today that's going to be worth less tomorrow. So I try to do most of my spending with Australian dollars and hold the Bitcoin. However, having said that, if you want to spend Bitcoin, a lot of online merchants take it, and it's becoming more and more widespread, like Tom said. A lot of other countries are rushing through adoption, and like Japan, it is a recognized form of payment from the government. So you can walk into just about any store in Japan and you can pay with your barcode on your phone, right? So it's getting wider adoption. The other way you can do it is a lot of exchanges. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. Some exchanges will issue you a debit card that's backed by your Bitcoin balance. So if you've got whatever $10,000 worth of Bitcoin on your exchange balance, which I don't recommend, they can issue you a debit card and you can just pay with that debit card just like you would any other credit card, and it decrements your amount of Bitcoin available. It gets changed into local currency and you can use it in a store just like you could anywhere else. So the solutions are coming. It's obviously not a day-to-day thing. Like if I want to go down to the newsagent and pay for my dry cleaning, probably can't do that. But that time will come, I think, in the near future. And in Australia, they're rolling out a bunch of Bitcoin ATMs as well. So you can just go up to a Bitcoin ATM and take your cash out like you would anywhere else.
Yeah, and I've also seen a website, the Office Services. So here in Australia, we have obviously utility bills, electricity, water, AGL, or gas, whatever it might be. And you've got what they call the BPay. Well, there's a website now where you can pay those bills with your cryptocurrency, and you can choose between Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, and it just does the transaction. They take a very small fee, but it means you can use your crypto world. So if you bought Bitcoin and it's gone up in value essentially and then pay for bills or even book a flight, essentially you got that for free, if that makes sense. So we'd look about the adoption of Bitcoin and buying Bitcoin. And I think, we've spoken about it before, Barry, that, if you bought, $10 worth in 2010, it'd be worth what, probably $8, $9, $10 million today. So not saying that's going to happen again, but we're just talking about this early adoption of this cryptocurrency. If your strategies to buy and hold, like what Barry's talking about, and I have done exactly the same thing. I've got two young kids, and what we did, we sat down and we had a meeting about it, and we said, look, you guys are young. We took a little bit of money out of each of their savings accounts, and we put them into crypto, and they're just going to be there for whenever. You know, in theory, and from what we've seen, it's going to be worth a lot more than what we bought the Bitcoin at. I know from when we purchased it a few months back, it's gone up a lot. So the kids are happy, but it's a set and forget strategy, and I think that works really, really well. So when I talk to my friends and say, okay, great, so what do I do with it? There's lots of different options that we can do with crypto right now, and that's only going to increase as time goes on, Barry, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
All right, so we might wrap this up by talking about, well, you know, you and I are big proponents of it, so we're painting a rosy picture, but let's look at the flip side of that Bitcoin, so to speak. What are some of the worst parts about using cryptocurrencies?
I think people not understanding how to get involved or the technology, and it's like the internet back in the early 90s. There was fear. People just didn't understand it. They don't grasp it. They don't trust it. So outside of the people's fears, we've got to look at the practical applications, and we've hammered about this so many times already, that when you get your cryptocurrency, it needs to stay somewhere. Now, if you bought it from an exchange, there have been instances over the last few years where exchanges have shut down. You lose the money that's sitting on that exchange. That's one risk. Another bad thing is we talked about the wallets. If you lose your password, someone steals your password, you can't get that money back. You have no insurance. There is no governance around it. So that's something to be really, really careful of. And we talk about it again, is it keeps your stuff, your private keys and stuff in your wallets safe. What else have you heard from your group of friends, Barry?
Well, there's a lot of scams around, right? There's because one, it's relatively new, and two, it's pretty unregulated. A lot of shady operators will come up with scams, you know, about how you can invest your Bitcoin and you triple your money overnight in 10 seconds, etc. And a lot of people get sucked in by these scams. So it's still a bit of the wild. It's the Wild West out there, right? So a lot of people making outrageous claims, a lot of people doing some dodgy business models, Ponzi schemes, etc. So they do exist, and I'm not going to say they don't. So it is really important that, one, you do your research, you look into these companies before you invest any amount of money in anything. If it sounds too good to be true, it almost certainly is. And two, try and find a trusted source where you can go to. So obviously we want to position ourselves as that. We do a lot of research in this stuff. You know, we get sucked in sometimes, make mistakes sometimes. So you get to benefit from us making mistakes. But we do a lot of research, and we'll be posting that research as, you know, blog posts and podcast episodes, etc. So it is the Wild West. There are a lot of scams out there. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. So do your homework. Be conservative about where you invest your crypto and what you use it for. So there are a number of, you know, especially in the ICO market, which we'll talk about in another episode, where it's called initial coin offering, where people are starting a new business model and they issue a new coin, you know, and they say this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And people invest millions of dollars into this new coin. And then all of a sudden the next day, everyone's gone and no one knows where those quote unquote founders have gone to. They've just disappeared. So there is some scary dark shadows out there for sure, but do your research, like we said, and never invest anything you can't afford to lose at the moment.
Yeah, great point. We keep hammering about it. And if you want to take a risk, that's cool. For me, if I can mine the money, essentially quote marks, get it for free, then I'm using the house money to play with. And that's the strategy that I've taken on board outside the buy and hold and a few different things. And so far, it's a huge learning curve. And this is, I suppose, Barry, why you and I discussed about launching this podcast. We can, you know, publish our learnings out there. And, you know, School of Crypto is about learn and earn. That's our little tagline. I thought it was really cool. But we want to share that with the rest of the world and to say, guys, look, this is here. I think it's here to stay, in my opinion. And maybe we can help with some strategies and like obviously point out things that you need to look out for, because I do suffer from FOMO. We discussed that in an early episode. And I have lost money through some of these high-risk sites because it was too good to be true.
Yeah, and I want to tell the listener, like, we're not positioning ourselves as know-it-all experts. We're people just like you, listener, who thought this was interesting, started to scratch the surface, disappeared down the rabbit hole of finding about everything we can about the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency space. trying our hand at a lot of different things, making a lot of different mistakes. So we're just like you. We just may be maybe, you know, 12 months ahead of you. So you get the opportunity to learn from what we've discovered and also learn from all the mistakes that we made along the way so you don't have to make them yourself. So kind of the point of the whole podcast and the point of schoolofcrypto.com. So I want to thank you for tuning in. We might wrap it up there, Tom. Any parting words?
No, I'm all good, Barry. Thank you. Perhaps to the listeners, if you've got any questions that we haven't answered or covered today or it's something you'd like to know about, you can head over to schoolofcrypto.com, have a look at our show notes, and you can post questions in there, and we'll cover them in future episodes.
All right. We look forward to seeing you on future episodes. And in the meantime, head over to schoolofcrypto.com, sign up for our newsletter and our alerts, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Tom.
All right. Cheers, Barry. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Crypto Podcast. You can find the links, show notes, and all the latest cryptocurrency news over at schoolofcrypto.com.